KBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. TikTok attorneys say the app in the U.S. will go dark Sunday after the Supreme Court upheld the ban unless the China-based company sells the app due to national security concerns. GOP Senator Josh Hawley reacting on what possible action President-elect Trump could explore.
President Trump, under the law, can delay any implementation for 90 days with the stroke of a pen. The law permits that. I would expect he'd probably do that in order to facilitate further discussions about a sale.
Inauguration Day Monday, moving indoors due to the dangerous cold expected in Washington, D.C. At the Justice Department today, staffers lined up to bid farewell to Attorney General Merrick Garland as he left the building. He served in the role for the entire Biden administration. Walgreens has agreed to pay nearly $107 million to settle a suit that alleged violations of the False Claims Act. The Justice Department says the large pharmacy chain resold prescriptions that were filled but never dispensed. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section at WGBW.fm. For 97.9 WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. Just days before it was to take effect, the U.S. Supreme Court has unanimously decided to uphold the federal law that bans TikTok. The law goes into effect on Sunday. It bans TikTok from U.S. app stores unless the China-based owner sells it to an American company. ByteDance, the company that owns TikTok, has said it will not sell. However, the Wall Street Journal has reported that they are considering a sale to ex-owner Elon Musk. A Little Chute mother has been convicted in the drug overdose death of her 2-year-old child. 29-year-old Brooke Seal pleaded no contest to felony charges of neglecting a child, causing death, and possession of an illegal article. A charge of possession of narcotics was dismissed but read into the record. Seal's daughter died from fentanyl poisoning. Investigators found a backpack containing nearly 1,500 fentanyl pills in a laundry room of the home. Seal will be sentenced on March 24th. Did you know attending the NFL Draft 2025 in Green Bay will be free? Nick Meisner, Vice President of Digital Marketing for Discover Green Bay, said while you can purchase things during the draft, attending and being part of the festivities will cost nothing.
The draft campus opens at noon, and basically it's like a festival of football. Inside the campus, it's like a state fair of football that people can enjoy. And that opens at noon and runs until the last pick of that day.
Meisner made his comments in a recent episode of Lean Local with Jim Schmidt, airing Sundays on WGBW. The NFL Draft 2025 takes to Lambeau April 24th through the 26th. I'm Lisa Hale, 97.9 WGBW News. For news anytime, log on to WGBW.fm.
The Bucks bounce back. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA, the Bucks won 4 of their last 5 games. They host the Raptors tonight. Now, they beat the Magic on Wednesday. On Tuesday, they ended the Kings' 7-game winning streak. But on Sunday, they got blown out by the Knicks. Head coach Doc Rivers.
Tonight, I thought we were high energy. The other night, we had no energy. The good part of that is it makes you know you can play against anybody. The bad part of that is if you don't have it, you can lose against anybody, and we've shown that too much.
Baseball players and coaches remembering Bob Uecker, who died after a battle with lung cancer. I asked Ryan Braun if he relied on Uecker as a confidant and friend.
Yeah, I think it always felt like a safe space when you were having a conversation with him. He was almost like a team psychiatrist or psychologist where you knew that you could talk to him about anything, you could fully trust him, you valued his feedback and his opinion, and you knew that anything that you shared, you could trust that he was going to do right by you.
That's former Brewer Ryan Braun. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a few flurries, a low in the low teens, windy with wind chills below zero. Partly sunny for tomorrow, high upper teens, wind chills near 5 below. Partly cloudy Sunday, high near 5, wind chill to 20 below. Currently, it's 44 degrees.
Mino and the Mayor.
We're very pleased to have Nathan Olson here, Olson Legal Group, also the sponsor of Veteran Salute.
Welcome. And thanks. I want to start out with that whole thank you for your service, because we really mean that. And you hear that.
I appreciate that.
And it's really sincere. And some people say, well, it gets a little bit overused. What else are you going
to
say?
You know, I really don't know what to say when people say that, too.
Right.
Because there is a selfless service aspect to it, but...
But you appreciate it.
Yeah, you very much.
Mino and the Mayor, weekday morning, 6 till 9 on WGBW and WISS and the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
What's worse, fast drivers or slow drivers? Karina listening on WAUK in Milwaukee.
Slow drivers are the worst. They think too slow. They stop in the middle of the highway to think about where they're going. Maybe they need to turn left and right. They're changing lines for, oh my God, I can do all day long.
Karina,
can you
tell us what you really think?
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Civic Media Sports Authority Mike Clemens, visit Kenosha Marketing Director Meredith Jamesco, and Bar Band Friday Nights resume with Max Inc. radio host Terry Barr.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. I'm Jess P.S. I try to keep this ship running. Today, we're looking back at two of our great conversations with Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, and our favorite Delano Democrat. In this hour, we're looking back at our talk on January 6th about two very different anniversaries on this day.
Harvey Kay, welcome. Happy Hang Mike Pence Day, man.
Oh, jeez. I guess you weren't kidding when you said you used that.
Hey, man, we're just calling them as we see them around here, Harvey, and that's what they were chanting 4 years ago today. However, today a little less dramatic. The vice president, of course, the loser in the election, had to call out the numbers, and that had to be a little tough, but no drama today, Harvey. What are your thoughts? Welcome.
I've been thinking about this all day, though I didn't prepare my words at all. The word that comes to mind really is ironic. Mm. It's ironic that the man who instigated a mini insurrection, a battle for around the Congress, who was, as you said, a battle that included, nooses in preparation, that kind of thing. I mean, to think that today, in a peaceful transition, or at least a peaceful recognition of what transpired in November took place. I mean, it actually hurts. It's as if, not the gods, but as if the devils in the world are putting us through this. They're putting us through this because the Biden administration, specifically Garland, the attorney general, didn't have the decency, I thought you might imagine I say courage, the decency and courage to prosecute him as an insurrectionist. And moreover, that I think it was the Supreme Court that disallowed Colorado's effort to ban him from their ballot, because according to the Constitution and the 14th Amendment, if you have been an insurrectionist, you are not entitled to run for political office, federal office, I assume specifically. No, I mean, it's just outrageous. It really hurts. And I don't know how other people feel. I can tell you that I can laugh at these things in some ways and the irony, but it is the case that it is very unnerving that this man who lives on spewing hatred and speaking vengeance is now going to be occupying the White House. And we've already seen, by way of his nominations or the nominees that he's been talking about for the cabinet positions, that he has no sense. The word decency comes to mind again, but he has no sense. It's not even just decency. He just doesn't care about the United States and what appointing the likes of Tulsi Gabbard to be Director of National Intelligence. And originally, Gates being mentioned for the attorney generalship. I mean, it's just wild. I mean, If my father was still alive, a veteran, a decorated veteran of World War II, he would say to me, "What the hell is wrong with this generation?" Mm-hmm. Okay, that's. I mean, he said that to me once before, and after Bobby Kennedy's assassination, actually, and I could just imagine him being just shocked at witnessing what's going on. I mean, I'm shocked. It's just unbelievable, really. But on the other hand, Jen, I'll just mention, I know we were thinking of getting to it later, but maybe we come back to it. Today is the 84th anniversary of a very positive moment in American history, a very progressive moment, when Franklin Roosevelt, on January 6, 1941, delivered a State of the Union message in which he projected a vision of this country as a champion of four freedoms: freedom of speech and expression, freedom of worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. Now, he didn't mean that we had achieved that. He meant that we would commit ourselves after the war to pursuing those four fundamental freedoms. And maybe later, if there is time, we can come back to talking about that.
Yeah, and that was that speech, is that literally on today's date in 1941?
Yes, January 6th, yes. And by the way, and this is the other thing, because I know we're going to get to all this stuff. This Saturday, 5 days later, 3 years and 5 days later in the State of the Union message, is when Franklin Roosevelt delivered his vision for an economic bill of rights for the United States and called on Congress to try to enact it, or at least try to realize the aspects of it in American life. So this is a week every year, ever since I began my work on FDR, that, you know, I guess, was it 20 years ago already? Yeah. Well, some time ago. I mean, I could not, you know, I thought, wow, this is going to be every year. You know, I try to remind people of these things, not because they're just really nice words, but because they really did inspire progressive action.
Yeah.
I mean, it shaped a generation. And what do we have now for inspiring words? We don't have any inspiring words. People seem to be, well, the politicians we have don't know how to create them and don't know how to speak them. And the rest of us seem to, you know, just go along.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, our favorite Delano Democrat. I want to certainly get to the four needs, four issues freedoms. There.
Yeah,
the four freedoms. But you brought up Merrick Garland. And I had a discussion last Friday with our pal James Santel, former U.S. attorney, you know, worked in the Justice Department. And I got to tell you, man, I know how bad Bill Barr was, right? He came out, got in front of, well, he was in the Bush administration, got a bunch of people off there, came out, got in front of the Mueller report and did all sorts of shenanigans, basically acting as Donald Trump's attorney. Although he did get out before January 6th, he saw the writing on the wall. But Merrick Garland, and I think it was very, it was bad for what Bill Barr did to misrepresent and lie to the American people. But I got to tell you, Harvey, I think the slow walking or the non-committal for Merrick Garland, come on, time is of the essence. We had all the evidence you need. I mean, what do you need? It's pretty, if you're going to do an investigation, this was like the easiest coup to investigate in American history. It was all right there. It was all, come on, people were videoing themselves participating in the insurrection, man. It was like a selfie insurrection. How can you not find the will to pursue it? Harvey, I think Merrick Garland has really grievously failed us. What are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. And to imagine that we were all upset once upon a time when Obama nominated him to the Supreme Court, you know, and McConnell and the Republicans blocked it. They wouldn't even consider his nomination. And now we realize that his nomination would have been as tepid as imaginable. You know, there's an irony here too, which, just so I happen to know this, Franklin Delano Roosevelt had a chief of staff, a lawyer, in fact, a judge, former judge, named Samuel Rosenman. And this was it was Rosenman who really put together the famous Brains Trust back in 1931 when the campaign for president was just beginning. And it was Rosenman who really helped guide the FDR years, 12 years of Roosevelt's presidency. And what is amazing to consider is I believe it's Rosenman's granddaughter whom Garland is married to.
Oh, really?
And you would have thought that somehow or other, the courage and the chutzpah, as Rosamond was Jewish, would have found its way into that, you know, into the life of Merrick Garland. But no, not at all. I mean, not at all.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's our guest this hour, Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. We're going to move on to some of these other topics, our four freedoms, FDR, State of the Union. But we do want to get your comments in on the anniversary. January 6th, 4 years ago today, an insurrection occurred, and now the voters just put that same cat back into the White House. Less drama today, but a couple of callers. Let's get to it. Jack from Racine, you are up. Welcome, Jack. What are your thoughts?
Hello.
Hi there.
I was listening earlier today, and I heard some replay of comments and just heart-rending testimony from Capitol Police who were there being beaten and by this mob. And I just, those are so effective. And I just thinking, I don't know what's going to happen with these pardons, and I really want to leave you guys with a question as to what you think people ought to do. I know where I'm at. People were out with signs in the streets when Trump was elected and inaugurated, and now if he comes through with pardoning these people who did this to these Capitol Police officers, I don't know. It's a different mood. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I think there's going to be a lot of people very upset whether people are going to be they're back in, they're kind of digging in their hole, not watching the news and stuff. A lot of people, are they going to stay on top of it? And I just want to encourage people to, you know, stay on top of it. I'm not sure what the right thing to do on that particular date is, but, you know, we got to be ready to jump on the stupid things that we know Trump is going to do, not just stupid, probably more criminal. And that being one of them, releasing these killers, really, some of them, you know, and many of them, pardon them and free. And people, you got to make sure people realize Biden didn't pardon these people who had committed murders, etc. You know, he commuted their sentences, and there's a big difference. Someone's going, well, Biden did it. No, Biden didn't do it. What do you think?
Thanks for the call, Jack. One of the points is, what do we do? Well, obviously, we got to stay informed. I think that that's the first thing we got to do. And we got to be able to articulate a response and an argument back to folks that says, you know, oh, Biden did it. You know, Biden did this and Biden did that. There are distinct differences on actions between these two men on commutation and on what Trump has said he's going to do with pardon. Harvey K., I did see that Enrico Otero, the head of the Proud Boys, he's doing 22 years for seditious conspiracy, has specifically asked Trump for a pardon. How do you think that's going to go over in the party of law and order if Trump follows through on that particular campaign promise? We've got about a minute left in the segment, Harvey.
Well, I mean, seriously speaking, the days of the Republicans where the party of law and order are past. I mean, this was a Republican administration, Republican president who called out the worst elements to try to bring about a coup, basically. I mean, we're talking about a coup d'etat is what would have transpired. You know, I was trying to imagine what at least symbolically, what could people have done today, okay, to register their protest?
Yeah.
You know, and I imagine they would not have allowed any crowds near the Capitol building. I think they learned their lesson. But maybe people could have all turned out around the Lincoln Memorial in mass, you know, how about a million person march around at the Lincoln Memorials to remind people that the Confederacy almost won the day on January 6, 1941. I mean, that was my thinking. And I mean, the caller's right. I mean, I'm sure he's rather upset because the fact is we don't know of any protests that occurred whatsoever that the man who wanted to stage a coup, you know, definitely did launch an insurrection. Is president
Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy.
More from Harvey K. on the very different anniversaries of January 6th when we get back.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Maggie Dawn Show.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people.
Native American voters prevailed in federal court against the state of North Dakota, protecting the ability to elect the candidate of their choice. January 13th, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear a redistricting case we covered back in May 2024, affirming a North Dakota Federal Appeals Court decision. The appeals court had dismissed a state house district challenge by two non-native residents who claimed their rights were infringed. The case dates back to 2021 when the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara nations, also known as the MHA nation, negotiated with the state to protect native voting power under the 1965 Voting Rights Act, Section 2. After an agreement, state GOP officials later shamefully reversed positions in 2022, embracing a new GOP tactic which argues such majority-minority districts are a violation of the Equal Protection Clause under the U.S. Constitution. The same argument has been made in Robinson versus Calais over Louisiana's now two majority-minority districts. The MHA Nation decision protects North Dakota State House District 4A and three other districts. Great news for Native voters. But the Louisiana case is expected to be heard in the High Court in early 2025, and the conservative justices seem to have made it their mission to dismantle the VRA. We have links to the history of the case at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Happy Friday, everyone. Dom and I will be back live on Monday, but today we're looking back at some of our favorite moments with Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. And this hour, we're looking at January 6th, an anniversary for two very different events in American history.
Just a real quick headline here, Harvey, before we move on to other items. The Raw Story reporting, the judge denies Trump's demand to delay fraud sentencing. So we'll take it. I mean, he's going to keep on throwing it against the wall and see what sticks. So far, Judge Mershon is not wavering in that. So, but I'm not sure what the point of sentencing is if there's not going to be any fine or consequence or jail time or probation or ankle bracelets or, you know, I don't know, some sort of consequence, Harvey, but at least it will stick with a conviction.
Who prosecuted that in New York? Does it mention, was that a state prosecution or a city prosecution or a federal?
Well, Rashad, that would have been, this is the fraud, right? So this would have been, this was Alvin Bragg, I believe, the Manhattan DA. This is on the
district attorney or state attorney general of the state. Yep. Yeah, boy. I mean, talk about, you know, we used to talk about Teflon presidents, right?
Yeah. Teflon. Yeah. Oh, well, they're all Teflon, you know, until they get caught, right? Who was the mob guy that was the original Teflon Don? You know, and he kept getting off and off and off. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're Teflon until you get convicted. And then you're longer Teflon. John Gotti, that was his name.
Yeah, right. Except with Trump. With Trump, man, he gets convicted and keeps walking.
Weird how that works. It's almost like there's a couple different levels of justice in this country. Let's move along. Let's talk about something inspiring. And, you know, you mentioned the Four Freedoms speech of FDR. back in what, 1941?
1941, January 6th, 1941.
So I'll call this Four Freedoms Day. It sounds a whole lot better than Hang Mike Pence Day, but yes. I do that one for the Megas. The Four Freedoms, let's dive into that a little bit, and let's reiterate what FDR said and how he defined those, and how do you think that relates or can translate into 2025, Harvey?
Okay, well, the first thing to understand is that when FDR delivers a speech like that, the Four Freedoms speech and later the Economic Bill of Rights speech in 1944, one of the things about it is he has tested the waters, and he feels a certain confidence that when he pronounces these kinds of things, and I'll read what he said in a moment, that he knows the American people are with him on it, okay? Even if they don't necessarily raise the banner, he knows they're with him on it. Yeah. And it's January 41. We have to understand war is already underway, not for the United States yet, but it's already underway in Europe, okay? Nazi Germany has basically conquered all of Europe, and the British are holding out, and Roosevelt is eager to provide what came to be known as Lend-Lease, where we would provide the materials to sustain Britain and its allies against the Nazis. That was otherwise known as the arsenal of democracy idea, that we would be the arsenal of democracy. It was also the case that a war had already been underway for almost
a year. Isn't this a real fancy way of saying we're going to supply some armaments and whatever they need to help them, although we're not going to get directly involved?
Yes, exactly. All right. Exactly. Gotcha. That. Right. But FDR already knew by January of 41 that the U.S., whether it wanted to or not, would end up in the war. OK, but what do I mean by that? Well, they had enough intelligence to know that Hitler's plans, once Britain was defeated and occupied, which never did come about because we provided the kinds of materials they needed, that in fact they were assuming they would then take all of North Africa. And from North Africa, the Americas, North and South, became a target that they could put into the, they could see it, so to speak. Yeah. And flying from West Africa to Brazil and the likes of that wouldn't be that much of a challenge. On top of which, their subs were basically patrolling all over the North Atlantic. So FDR knew that what he had to say that night in a speech was in many ways a kind of advance call to arms to Americans. And in the speech, he warned Americans that the dictators, meaning Hitler specifically and Mussolini, were not going to tell us when they were going to attack, and we needed to be prepared. So we would not only need to provide material and armaments to the Brits, we would also need to provide it to enable us when the time came to afford an army and a navy that could win a war. But then he also said, by pursuing this defense effort, did not mean we had to give up the great advances that were made during the 1930s New Deal against the Great Depression. And he actually called for sustaining those initiatives. But then he stops, or I should say he pauses, and he says, this is what they call a peroration in the speech. These are the key words. He says, in the future days which we seek to make secure, we look forward to a world founded upon four essential human freedoms. The first is freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world. The second is freedom of every person to worship God in his own way everywhere in the world. And I'll shorten the next two because they're a bit longer. The third is freedom from want everywhere in the world. The fourth is freedom from fear anywhere in the world. Now, the first two, freedom of speech and freedom of worship, they're in the first, if you like, four freedoms of the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
But he was taking the New Deal experience, providing government and labor efforts to, basically to overcome the Depression. And he was turning that into freedom from want. And then freedom from fear had to do with the fact of racism and anti-Semitism. It was time to transcend those. And when Americans heard those things on the radio, they understood what he was saying. And they actually became the words that guided the war effort. Now, FDR was no saint. He made terrible mistakes along the way. And I'm not talking about the affairs that he had, okay? What I'm talking about is the fact that we'll leave it at that.
We're taking a short break. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy, FDR, an inspiration from the past, perhaps someone to look to for the future. Come back with us.
More from January 6th with Harvey K. on the other side. From De Pere to Suamico, 97.9 WGBW. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For 97.9 WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. UW Green Bay has installed its first EV charging station on campus at Kirk Condon Hall, and in the next few months, a second will be installed in the Widener's Lot A. There's a small charge to use the stations as mandated by the state, but the charging ports were funded by an alumni donation. A new report shows Wisconsinites are spending time behind bars for unpaid traffic and parking tickets, and that means disadvantaged people can be the most targeted. If you find yourself in a municipal court and can't afford to pay your tickets, ACLU senior attorney Emma Shankshaft says you have the right to request what's known as a poverty hearing to request payment alternatives. But the ACLU report says, instead, most of the courts that still use carceral sanctions implement aggressive tactics like jailing people for unpaid tickets to increase enforcement and funding. Sometimes people have more than one ticket, and that can be hard to dig out of.
Paying that off can be an incredibly difficult task, and for people who can't afford it, they're just continuously kept in the legal system.
You might be thinking, wait, but these aren't criminal offenses. But for some, if they're in a court that issues carceral sanctions, the outcome is the same as if it was criminal. The ACLU of Wisconsin is asking that all municipal courts across the state end these practices and implement what it calls a more rational and equitable approach to addressing these debts. Several municipal courts in Northeast Wisconsin do currently issue warrants or commitments. They include Green Bay, Ashwaubenon, Brilliant, and Manitowoc, just to name a few. I'm Lisa Hale, 97.9 WGBW News. For news anytime, log on to WGBW.fm.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Malcolm in the Middle is putting the band back together. The crazy popular show that premiered in 2000 is ready for a reboot. Bryan Cranston and Jane Kaczmarek will return, as well as series creator and head writer Linwood Boomer. Frankie Muniz also returns as Malcolm, who is now almost 40. During the show's 151-episode run, it pulled 33 Emmy nominations. Disney announced they will make 4 episodes to start. In Oh My Gosh, it's been a few weeks since Taylor Swift has made news. She is being a supportive girlfriend. Travis Kelce has decided to continue his NFL career despite falling stat lines, and Taylor Swift says she fully supports his decision. That's the story. It's not much, folks, but a little Taylor Swift news is less depressing than other news happening around the world. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a few flurries, a low in the low teens, windy with wind chills below zero. Partly sunny for tomorrow, high upper teens, wind chills near 5 below. Partly cloudy Sunday, high near 5, wind chill to 20 below. It's 42 right now.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Pete Hegseth, confirmation hearing.
I've never disparaged women serving in the military.
Except for, you know, the podcast interview in like late November of 2024 when he said women in combat weaken the military. Except for that, Pete, did you get body snatched? Are you not the same guy that sat down in the Brosphere podcast?
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, I'm Samuel L. Jackson. When the UNCF, the United Negro College Fund, was founded 80 years ago, they hoped that they could change this nation for the better, and they have. As a proud alum of an HBCU, Morehouse College, I'm an advocate for HBCU. I support the work that UNCF does for students of color, scholarship, and internship for 50,000 deserving students each year. Visit uncf.org today, and remember, a mind is a terrible thing to waste.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we will cover the inauguration in Washington, D.C., and also talk about who the next civil rights leader might be for Martin Luther King Day. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Dom Salvia Show. I'm Jess P.S. I produce this fine program. We are revisiting our January 6th talk with Harvey K.
We got some callers holding, so let's get to it. Talking about, of course, today, January 6th. I like to refer to it as Hang Mike Pence Day, but it is also, as I've been edified by my buddy Harvey K over here, the anniversary of FDR's Four Freedoms speech in 1941. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. We'll get into that and some more of your comments as well. Let's start with Dana from LAX. Welcome, Dana from La Crosse. Happy New Year's, man. What do you got for us?
Hey, everybody. Say, I like the 1941 version better.
That's what I'm saying, man. If we're going to celebrate one, let's have it be FDR's 1941 speech.
Yeah. Say, you know, there's not much Mershon can do, really, that's going to have any type of impact on Trump. A fine ain't going to matter to him. Any of that stuff. Because, you know, his fans are going to pay for it. I thought of something last night that Mershon could do that I think would probably have some pretty good impact, the most that I can think of. What he should do is make Trump create a video, and then that would a video of Trump himself explaining what he was convicted of, and then how and why our system of justice found him guilty, and then force him to send those out on all of his media channels, social media channels, and to all of his email lists. And then I think that is the only way to preserve the history, because they're going to try and rewrite it. And this way, history is preserved.
I like it, Dana. That is a great idea. A little community service.
Yeah.
On record for all time.
A little civic service, too.
All right. Thank you for the call, Dana. Happy New Year. I like that idea, Harvey. What about you?
I think that's great. And maybe just for the fun of it, we could put him in one of in the movies, the old prison garb of the stripes, you know, put him in something like that, doing just that. You know, I may not be in jail, but this is what it would look like.
That's awesome. Thank you, Dana. Appreciate it. 855-752-4842. Wouldn't cost nothing. Wouldn't really stop him. He's got plenty of time before he gets inaugurated.
I think he would
again
explode. I think just the process of trying to sit down and say those words out loud would cause a little bit of spontaneous combustion.
It would be very difficult for him to get through it, which would make it all the more glorious. 855-75-CIVIC. Kurt from Madtown, you're up. Welcome, Kurt. Happy days. What do you got for us?
Say, Harvey, I'm hoping you can speak on this. My other half is reading a book. It's called The Demon of Unrest by Eric Larson. Hmm. And she's been reading sections of the book. And the South, especially members in South Carolina, how they plotted to stop the certification of President Lincoln, and how they also plotted to assassinate him. So from what she read, it's like January 6th all over again. We're repeating history yet again.
Mm. The Demon of Unrest. Thanks for the call, Kurt. Harvey, your comments.
That comparison is the closest that Donald Trump will ever get to Abraham Lincoln in historical stature. the whole story leading up to and in those early phases of the Civil War are absolutely astounding. And I'm not familiar with all of those kinds of details, but they really are astounding. And it's striking. In fact, oddly enough, I was thinking just today about the fact that I would never have expected. Somehow I had a very optimistic view of American history since the time I was in college in the late 60s. I could not have imagined that it would be in the course of my lifetime in the 21st century that we would see the kind of activity that we saw in 1860 and 61. And so, which is to tell you just how shocking it is. And what worries me a lot, I've been worried about this for some years, is the degree to which these kinds of things will come to be viewed as normal. And the cherry on top, or the final push towards that normalcy or normality, whichever word you want to use, is the fact that he has just been confirmed as the winner of the November elections. Mm. I mean, in that sense, if somebody said there is no justice, I would have to defer to that remark. It's unbelievable to think that. And the assassination attempts against Lincoln, I'm sure, were far more numerous than any of us realize. Yeah.
Thank you for the call, Kurt. 855-752-4842. When we talked about the anniversary of the Four Freedoms speech FDR gave on this date in 1941, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear, was that as much as trying to prep the American population for entry into World War II? I mean, was that the whole basis of this speech, a slow walk, perhaps? I mean, we're coming out of a very protectionist age after World War I. You know, in some regards, I kind of see that playing out right now. You hear, you know, Trump talking about all these tariffs and wanting to kind of pull back of Americans' influence around the world. Was that in the context to really get people prepared for what was, as you mentioned, ultimately going to come?
Yeah, well, I think it was twofold. Yes, it definitely was that. In fact, in the book that I wrote, The Fight for the Four Freedoms, I came to the conclusion in the course of writing that it was a call to arms and almost a declaration of war, because what he's doing is he is projecting what America is meant to be about, going all the way back to the Declaration of Independence. In fact, when I was working on the Four Freedoms speech, I saw it in line with the Declaration of Independence, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, and now FDR's Four Freedoms speech, really. And so I think it was telling Americans, look, they're going to come for us, the dictators, the fascists, the Nazis, the Japanese militarists and imperialists. And we have to remember that that when we fight, whatever mistakes will have been made in this war effort, that this is what it's about. This is what we have to envision the post-war world being about when that time comes. I think you're right. I think it is in many ways that it wasn't that he was trying to get them militarized. It was that he wanted them to understand that, yeah, that there was, if you like, a progressive mission. I know it sounds very imperialist to say the United States had a mission, but when you're facing fascism, you got to start believing that there's a purpose for opposition and for going to war against fascism.
And there's a reason that the fight will come. It is the freedoms of speech and expression, of whatever religion you choose or choose to not engage in, not forced upon you, a freedom from want.
That's right.
Fear. Yeah.
Yeah. And we shouldn't forget that we're talking about, and when we're talking fascism, I mean, I remember 10 years ago, none of us would have used it, okay, to refer to Republicans it just wouldn't have come to our minds to use them.
No, right.
But nowadays,
it's amazing how times have changed, Harvey.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you when I really mentally resisted using the term regarding the formation of the MAGA forces and Trump, because
you don't want to cheapen it, right? I mean, it's a historical bad word, let's call it, in my opinion.
Yeah, but when you consider the kinds of things that he's been saying that he would like to do and accomplish, and by the way, the proof is the company one keeps, right? Mm-hmm. And Elon Musk is proof of that very fact. I mean, Elon Musk is now literally pursuing, his ambition is to get this far right-wing party in Germany to become the ruling party. And those are the folks who were like the heirs to the authoritarian regimes of the past. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing. You know, I would also add that if we ever had bothered to go after the billionaires as Bernie had asked us to, we might have been able to temper the power of the likes of Musk and Bezos and that lot.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Temper. You know, and that's the thing. I think, you know, we have the power in the numbers. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, one person, one vote. You know, Musk got a lot of money, but he's only got one vote. And if we allow ourselves, as people do, to be manipulated and cajoled by the money, and that's not an uncommon thing. It's not the first time it's happened. It won't be the last. That's how it rolls. But I think when people get fed up and they tune out and they turn off and it feels like there's nothing we can do. A guy's got all the money. What are you going to do? Well, that's exactly at the time when we need, you know, the community and people to come together and recognize where the power actually stands. It yes. is with the people. We, through our representatives, can make the laws, can say, hey, if you're going to be hoarding the billions of dollars, here's your new tax rate. If you're going to, you know, I mean, if you're going to be bringing jobs in or out of the country, here's the breaks. Here's how we, as a country, are going to do business from here on out. Here are our priorities, for example. Talk about the New Deal, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, these kinds of things. These are our priorities. If you're just going to, you know, be an Elon Musk and hoard the money, we as a people, well, we can do something about that. We literally can make laws to address it, as Bernie Sanders has mentioned, as you brought up.
In 2 years into the New Deal administration, FDR was elected in 32, so it's 33, 34. In 1934, he had already suggested this in 33, but he seriously called upon Congress to find a way to limit the wealth of the rich. And he did so because he said, one, it's not really good for the economy, and more and no less important, it's terrible for democracy. They because of the power that they will wield with that money in terms of, you know, public information and the media. What the media was a different form than it is today, but you're talking newspapers, you're talking magazines, you're talking radio, which FDR fortunately learned how to master with his fireside chats. Yep. But he was seriously worried about the power of the, he called them the economic royalists, to compare them to the political royalists of the American Revolution period. I mean, he was serious.
Aren't we dealing with this exact same thing still right now? You have the billionaires that are only in the Washington Post, the LA Times.
Yeah,
right? I mean, absolutely. You have Musk over on Twitter, you know, limiting people's ability to express themselves on his platform if they're critical of him. I remember how they used to be so upset when people would get, you know, shut out or tuned out of the social medias. And now the guy that owns it, if he doesn't like what you're saying, he'll pull your check mark or whatever the case may be. But point being is the money still controls. I mean, you had a Washington Post cartoonist resign after the Post would not publish the cartoon piece of a bunch of the oligarchs, a bunch of the tech bros and Mickey Mouse bowing to a statue of Donald Trump. For some reason, they thought that was just beyond the pale. But what is the damage done? Well, there you have it, man. It's supposed to be the fourth estate, but when it's all controlled by the billionaires and the economic royalists or whatever the term was, Harvey, we are dealing with these same problems now, or perhaps it's a continuation. Maybe it ebbs and flows. What do you think? It seems like talking about now when you're talking about, you know, 30s and 40s.
Absolutely. When you consider that Musk must be worth about $350 billion right now. And what, you know, he's been looking into buying either MSNBC or CNN. I mean, how much worse could those channels get? Imagine if Musk is running them, right?
Right. You'll find out real quick. I hear who's the guy that got convicted of the Parkland shooting guy? What, right? The hard right winger guy. What's his name? He's got his InfoWars.
Alex Jones.
Oh, yeah. InfoWars is up for sale. Maybe they'll go and buy some InfoWars. Folks are listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's Harvey K. We have one more segment. We talked about the four freedoms speech from FDR. I also want to talk about, how does that relate to now? And we bring this up. I know you're a big fan, Harvey, but I know you're the expert on the 21st century economic plan for the people. Let's talk about that as well.
Come back with us. One last segment from this January 6th episode. Well, we stand here all together.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on air.
The 2025 draft is almost here, bringing in guests from around the world for this once-in-a-lifetime event. Ready to turn your home into a revenue powerhouse?
Simple Life Hospitality makes it easy to rent your home and provides expert, locally managed care backed by over 50 years of experience. All guests are fully vetted for your peace of mind, so don't miss out. Partner with Simple Life Hospitality today. Visit SimpleLifeRentals.com and make the most of this unforgettable event. That's SimpleLifeRentals.com.
Civic Media, Wisconsin's source for real news and great conversation, offers podcasts of all of our daily shows online and on demand. Simply go to civicmedia.us, click on Daily Shows, and choose the podcast that you want to download. Shows are updated daily, or you can save them and listen all at once. Our podcasts are sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. You are an organ donor, right? Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Learn more at heroicdeed.com.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In the first week of the new session of the Wisconsin State Legislature, Republicans fast-tracked a measure that would put a question on the ballot in the upcoming spring election that would enshrine voter ID in the state constitution. Two things on this. First, it is telling that Republicans made this their very first order of business. Senate Democratic leader Dianne Hesselbein responded to this, saying it's not cost of living or health care or gun violence that Republicans wanted to focus on, but a constitutional amendment. Telling, isn't it? But that leads to the second piece. Republicans are clearly doing this for politically motivated reasons. By having this on the spring election ballot, they're betting it will make it more likely that people who showed up to vote for Donald Trump in November will be heading to the polls to help elect right-wing candidate Brad Schimmel to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. That election is on April 1st, so buckle up.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
The Dom Salvia Show. I'm Jess P.S., the producer. One last segment with Harvey K. on the two very different anniversaries of the state.
Harvey, thank you for joining me. Mondays are so much fun when you come around. We talked about the Four Freedoms speech, 41, in 1941 on today's date. But the other issue, the other conversation, something that we've talked about quite a bit, I want to continue that conversation, 21st Century Bill of Rights. Harvey, it seems, and it's kind of maybe evident today as some of the conversations as Vice President Harris was, you know, reading the numbers and presiding over the electoral count. What happens to the Democratic Party? Where are they going? Are they wandering in the wilderness right now? And I wonder, and I know you're a big fan and the expert on FDR, where the inspiration is, what the message is, what a party should focus on. Number one, certainly to benefit this country, but politically to, you know, bring working folks back into the party, to, you know, a big tent to attract people to the Democratic Party. Is that the 21st Century Bill of Rights? And what does that mean? And how do we go about getting people dialed in to push something like this as an inspiration piece? Because, man, I tell you, I'm looking for some inspiration these days, man. We just see the insurrectionists getting, you know, basically back in office again. What are we doing, Harvey? And how do we do it?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking that question, because seriously, this has been on my mind for several years now. And it doesn't go away simply because the Democrats lose. In fact, right. What happens is it becomes all the more imperative that Americans, that the Democrats, let's be careful. Let's make the Democrats are in desperate need of a vision. They are lost right now. No one can tell you. I told a congressman from Wisconsin one time, we can walk down State Street in Madison and say to people, tell me, what is the Democratic Party? What does it stand for? And they won't be able to do it other than to tell it to you in terms that we'll try to deny what the Republicans assert. No, the Democrats need a vision that will remind them of what, first of all, of what it means to be an American and of what the past has afforded us and can literally show us we can ourselves do. I mean, the New Deal, the war effort, These two things proved that the people united will not be defeated, basically. So today, what the Democrats need to do, and I wish they'd pay attention, if they're not going to pay attention to me and Alan Minsky, the authors of the Economic Bill of Rights of the 21st century, at least go back and read a little history, preferably the fight for the four freedoms, but read some history so they can understand about the four freedoms and FDR's call for an Economic Bill of Rights. Look, this became a part of American thinking. I mean, most of the listeners here aren't going to be as old as I am, but when I finished college in 1971, I expected national health care to be the next thing Congress made happen.
Right.
I mean, it was inconceivable that we would now, 50 years later, find that the contributions to American life, the achievements of the generation of the 30s and the 60s has been under siege for all these years. Americans need to be reminded of what their ancestors were able to accomplish, and remind themselves that we too are Americans, or as Henry Demarest Lloyd once put it, to defend the achievements of our fathers, we have to create new achievements for our children.
Mm. The capabilities of the citizens of this country. Right. And hopefully it doesn't come down to a world war and all those kinds of things for us to realize that. Because that's, you know, we don't want those things. And perhaps we get a little complacent. Yeah, but think about the profit that's been made. You know, sliding insurance companies in to take a piece off of that health care. There's a lot of money there to be made, Harvey. If we're not busy making money, you know, how are we going to provide everyone health care? Because isn't that really, did we sacrifice all those things in the godly pursuit of unholy profits?
Well, all I can say, look, let's assume for a moment, that Americans were truly healthy. How's that?
Okay, let's assume that.
But it is the case that every time a person sits down to figure out how they're going to cover their health insurance, or for that matter, every time people sit down to try to figure out what benefits they're entitled to in health insurance, or what program of health insurance should they secure, they're going to probably get ulcers. I mean, frankly, yeah. I mean, I would think people would want national health care to take the stress out of life, if only that.
If nothing else, if all else remains the same, you still have access to the same doctors and all those kinds of things. It seems right. Like a no-brainer. So what is it? I mean, Harvey, I think it would pull well. Generally speaking, a lot of these things that perhaps people can't answer what the Democratic Party stands for. Well, you know, Social Security, Medicare, those kinds of things, right? I think the default would be some of those FDR kind of programs.
Yeah.
What's the pushback, do you think? Why isn't there more of a connection or more of an articulation, a battle cry for Bill of Rights or, you know, even if we start about, you know, just universal health care?
Well, let's start off with the reality that the billionaires don't only give to Republicans, they also give to Democrats. And if the Democrats ever started sounding like FDR again, you can imagine what the billionaires and the multimillionaires would be whispering in the ears of their agents in Washington and lobbyists. Okay. So I think it's a big hurdle to overcome.
It is a big hurdle, and we need the message. We need some guidance. Perhaps looking backward, it will enable us to look forward.
And that's where the labor movement comes in. That's where the labor movement comes in.
And that's Harvey Kaye, Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Have a great weekend, everyone. Dom and I will be back on Monday with fresh live content and another talk with Harvey Kaye.
From Hobart to Bay Settlement, 97.9 WGBW.
Hey folks, Jimmy K here from Max Inc. Radio. Join me this weekend as I welcome Isaiah and the New People. Plus, Terry chats with jazz musician Janet Plant. It's Max Inc. Saturday and Sunday, 6 to midnight across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Anthony Anderson. For the past 80 years, the United Negro College Fund has helped more than 500,000 students graduate from college and become leaders of our nation. Since its beginning in 1944, UNCF has made one truth known: a mind is a terrible thing to waste.
Support UNCF as they continue supporting the dreams and hopes of 50,000 deserving students each year. Please visit uncf.org today. Happy 80th, UNCF.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Israel's full government has approved the framework for the Gaza ceasefire deal, clearing the way for the first phase to begin Sunday. That includes releasing 33 hostages over the next 6 weeks. Gal Gagboa Deglal is the brother of one of the hostages held since the October 7th attacks.
Still can't be so hopeful and get my expectation high until I really see them starting to come back. But I also have a hope that I didn't have until now.
Tala Harzala is a college student inside Gaza and says after 15 long months of war, she has hope.
It's real. It's happening. And we're finally living it.
For the first time in 40 years, the inauguration will be moved indoors. Wind chills in Washington, D.C. could dip into the single digits Monday. TikTok users bracing for a ban on the social media app. The Supreme Court today upheld the ban if the China-owned company doesn't find a buyer by Sunday. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with